September 1st, 1988. And we have with us Annette Goldberg. Do you want to say your name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My name's Annette Goldberg? You mean you want me to say that? Yeah.
And where were you born?
Baltimore, Maryland.
And what's your permanent address?
2011 Ocean Avenue, Brooklyn.
The zip code?
Oh. 1123.
New York City?
Yeah.
And when were you born?
May 2nd, 1958.
Okay. Now this is for my book titled Attic. And we have your photograph on one side, and then a page on the other with your life. It might be two pages. I'm trying to just keep it to one page. But I'm going to edit what you say down and make it more clear or whatever. So why don't you just tell me what you think is important about you, what happened with your childhood, what's happening now, maybe to help other addicts who might read the book or the real world to understand what addiction is. And to let people know there's hope, and maybe a little bit of it about your spiritual path, basically what happened, what it's like now, any bizarre things that happened to you, it could be unique, your real character, your own philosophy on recovery. I am going to delete anything that has to do with fellowship, but I think I might need stuff like program and fellowship. I'm not sure how I'm going to deal with that, but just feel free to just talk. Don't worry about violating traditional
training. Are we going to have a conversation? Or
no, you're just going to rap from now, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
Okay, I'll try to do the best I can. Well, I guess I should start out by saying my name's Annette, and I'm a cannabis addict. Because if I don't say that, I probably won't get as much out of myself as I'd want. The only reason I'm alive today is because I could finally admit that my life is unmanageable and that, you know, I am powerless over my addiction. I knew that I suffered from some kind of disease, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't think it was a name. I guess I thought I was insane because I come from a very insane family, and it would have made sense that I was just insane. And that I was also an artist, and I realized that my kind of disease was very acceptable among my friends. Although the friends thinned out over the years because I became steadily more and more crazy. I picked up my first drug when I was 11. I loved it before, I'd never put it down. I was into basically at that time alcohol and speed. So whatever kids can get. And I felt I needed something, and I didn't know what it was because I felt abnormal. There was something wrong with me, and I always felt there was something wrong with me. I felt very confused about a lot of things. I can remember as a child being very... part of me thinks that I was born the way I am, and perhaps maybe I inherited part of this from my parents. Or maybe I was just always this way, or maybe it was the environment I grew up in, but I was very violent. I was always beating my little brother up, which was a year younger than me. I was always... trying to kill him, really. I felt always very extreme about everything. I'd always think people thought they knew me. When I'd walk down the street, this was when I was a little kid, like 4 or 5, I was paranoid. I was just really fucking paranoid. And I thought that I was going to be a star. This was another thing. I mean, I was obsessed with thinking I was going to be a star. Rich and famous and successful, everything, you know. And I also felt that my parents were trying to kill me. I thought my mother hated me. I was convinced that my mother hated me. I tried to be close with my father, and that sort of lasted till I was 5 years old, and I turned around on me, and I got really shattered after that. It later developed into a sexual relationship between me and my father, which went on till it went on from the age of 9 until 13. But up in from the years 5 to 9, when there was nothing sexual happening, I was going through all of these feelings of wanting to kill my parents, wishing something would happen so I could die, not knowing what I was going to do, feeling very confused, acting out a lot, stealing a lot, skipping school, causing trouble, always in trouble. When I didn't stop getting in trouble, really, I mean, in that kind of trouble, till I started using. So that's why I felt that using was for me, because I felt I had a disease that required medication for my symptoms. And I felt that I found a way to function. So the drugs enabled me to feel like I could function like other people. And I liked the people that I ended up with as a result of using, because nobody was prejudiced, nobody was, you know, it seemed like everybody shared on the same level. And I came from a very prejudiced neighborhood. They hated Jewish people, and I was constantly getting harassed for being Jewish. My brothers were getting beaten up. They used to try and beat up my parents. It was really insane where I grew up. So I just had a very negative self-image, and when I started getting high, I just became part of whatever I was part of, hanging out, like, doing everything that you do when you're high. Well, things started getting really bad in my house. With me and my father, the sex got more intense and more sick and more fucked up, and I was charging my father money for this, and it's like my mother was a very intense feminist, but she hated my guts, so it was like I couldn't get support from her. So I used to read my mother's feminist books, and I'd always talk about prostitution, and I used to think, well, I must, even though it's so confusing, I'm growing up in a very, very Catholic neighborhood. There were no Jewish people around us. So I'd go to church, worship the Virgin Mary, and then I'd go home and charge my father money for sex, you know. And not thinking there was anything wrong with any of this. And during the time, I was just using and skipping school and fucking up and just doing everything I did. And it just got more and more crazy till I finally got so frightened of my father that I went to family court, and because my father tried to have me arrested because I kept running away. So what I did is I finally told somebody what was going on, and at first nobody would believe me because my father's a physics professor, and they thought, well, you come from a nice Jewish family, you know, your father's a, you know, an intellectual, they to people that like that, don't do that shit. And this was in the time when nobody talked about this shit. So I ended up being put in a detention home later. I got put in a girls' home, and I was around people that were sicker than me, and I started using more, and just getting sicker and sicker and sicker, and to the point where everything was messed up. It was like totally messed up, and they were going to send me away to this institution upstate, and I was really nervous and scared, and I felt I had to get out of this country because I was being destroyed. I didn't know where I was going to go. I thought to join the army maybe and go to Germany or some weird shit like that. I never felt like I needed school. I couldn't concentrate an trade ever in school. And I didn't used to know why. I thought I was stupid. I really did, because my father used to tell me that I was stupid all the time. I believed him. But then I later came to find out it was all the drugs, the alcohol, the cigarettes, everything that, I mean, I was destroying myself. And I didn't realize it because everybody around me seemed to be doing the same thing. Well, I tricked my mother into giving me the address of some relatives in New York. And thing is, we were always very cut off from the family because everybody thought we were outcasts anyway. My mother was always pretty out to lunch, and my father was pretty out to lunch. Nobody in our family got along with anybody, so I had to trick my mother into giving me the address of one of my aunts. And I did that, and then I told her about that I was living in a Catholic home. And I come from I could say that probably my whole Jewish family is sick because they're in tremendous denial. I come from, you know, an upper middle class Jewish family where, you know, it's like nobody does shit like this. You know, they're in denial. You know, you just go to, like, an Orthodox school, you get a job as a caseworker, get married, fuck you, you know. And if they found out that I was in a Catholic girls' home, which I was in, that was, like, the worst thing that could ever happen to me. If I got sexually abused or whatever, that was nothing compared to the idea of living in a Catholic girls' home. I told them, of course, that I was living in a Catholic girls' home, and they became, like, they just overreacted, of course, and they decided to send me to Israel to a religious school. And so that solved my problem getting out of the country. I didn't have to join the army. And I thought maybe I'd go to Israel for 2 weeks and then I'd come back to New York City, because that's what I really wanted to do. That's not what happened. I ended up having to stay in Israel for 2 years. But in that time, I couldn't take my relatives, so I made them put me in this, with like a TC for emotionally disturbed young adults. And in that place, it restricted, drug restricted. You weren't allowed to do any drugs or stuff like that. And I managed to sneak them off and on while I was there, but I didn't use them that much. And during that time, I did get a little better, but I was still pretty dysfunctional, because it was a religious type of school in a way, and the psychiatrist there was very religious, and I guess, I don't know what it was, but I guess he didn't want to accept the fact that I came from a very abusive household, therefore he was not able to help me. And about the only thing I learned there was how to cope with other people, because it was like, there was a lot of group therapy, and I had to live with other people, which was real hard, because I was very dysfunctional. I mean, it was like, even though I lived with girls in this girls' home, I was constantly getting in fights and stuff, because I came from the Addams family. My parents were so out to lunch, you know, that I went out to the streets and took my behavior from home into the streets with me, and people just, you know, it was like I was going out there and speaking another language, aside from the fact, I guess, when I was having sex or something. I don't even know how to make this clear, you know. But I became terrified of life situations because of always trying to do the right thing and always messing up somehow and not knowing why. So I stayed in Israel for 2 years, and I finally got my relatives to send me back to New York, and the psychiatrist there suggested I go home and try to forgive my parents and try to live with them and go to school. And I tried to do that, because even though I knew what I was getting into, I thought, let me give it a chance, let me keep an open mind. I went back to my parents, and my father started trying to, like, get our sexual relationship going again. And my mother was having nervous breakdown after nervous breakdown at that point, and it was, you know, my father was, like, you know, attempting to beat me up for not doing what he wanted. So I moved out, tried to go to college, and I dropped out of college in 3 months, and moved to New York City, took all my tuition money, went to New York and decided, fuck everything straight. I'm going to become a performer the way I want. I mean, I've been doing music my whole life. But I wanted to go to school. I wanted to be straight. I wanted to keep myself from being crazy, because I was crazy already, and I wanted to be functional as a rebellion against what was going on in my life. But it didn't work out. So I took all the money I had from college, went to get a normal job in New York City, and, you know, like as a cashier, playing in the club, doing my, you know, I was doing like sort of just rock music, me playing guitar, singing my own original music, and doing cashier jobs and stuff like that. Well, nothing worked out. It was like I kept losing jobs because I just couldn't cope. I really couldn't cope. So I went on welfare. And during all this time, I was using, you know, but I don't know. I don't know whether the craziness or whether, you know, they're all linked. But I went on welfare, tried to get on SSI. I couldn't do that. So I eventually met somebody in the entertainment business who was into S&M. And he was somebody who I respected, who was a very successful movie person. And I thought, well, if this guy can do this shit, then I can. And I also felt like God didn't put my father in my life if he didn't want me to be a dominatrix, which is what I became. It took me a while to get used to the idea because I was afraid at first, you know. Because I also had been brutally raped, you know, the first time I had sex with anybody else but my father, okay. So I didn't really want to get into sexual situations because I was too afraid. But I learned, after being in the S&M scene for a while, that people wanted me to abuse them. So I thought, what a perfect business to go into. So I steadily, over the years, got more and more into this. But unfortunately, in order for me to continue doing this work, I just had to get high more and more in the clubs. And I got very confused. And what happened as a result of continuing to do the abuse to other people, I became masochistic myself. And I started wanting people to abuse me. So the whole thing turned on me, and I became very, very masochistic. And I got more and more high, more and more sick. And everything got twisted. And I really, you know, just kept doing it. I could not stop. And all along I was pursuing my music, too, which saved my ass in a way, because I was so afraid that if I put myself all the way into the S&M scene, I would lose my ability to do music. I lost my ability to do music down the line further when I started getting more and more into coke heavily. But it took a while. I think, well, some of the decisions I made while I was high led to things that made me so depressed that I wanted to commit suicide, so that also led me to doing more drugs and being more masochistic also. Everything was a big surprise to me, but one thing I did learn, by the time I walked into the program, I knew what people were saying was right, because I never knew about Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous or anything. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was a bunch of old men in raincoats, you know, sitting around, and I figured I'd have to be pretty weird to sit in there and really take it seriously, so I never even bothered. I tried many times to control my using, but I wasn't capable. I tried having functional straight boyfriends from Wall Street, you know, and I really tried to change a lot of locations and scenes and things. I really did try. I tried many times. I became a very strict vegetarian. I was reading lots of philosophy books, you know, like, I was really, really trying. There was never an answer, and when I walked into the program, there was this guy, and I think he was from my home, not my hometown where I was born, but the hometown where I grew up, which was in Buffalo. And he had a very complicated story. And at the time, it was another thing. I couldn't relate to anybody who was straight. And I was very confused about my sexuality. So this guy was gay, and he had, like, a very bizarre story. So my first qualification, I heard somebody who I identified with on a very major level, and it kept me coming. It was very strange for me, very strange for me. More and more as I go on, I realize the truth that it's scary to face the reality that that I don't even like to face this, because a lot of times I just try to, like, light myself up, but I really feel that that I'm definitely here for some higher purpose, and it's not for myself, because I feel like I was in so many situations, you know, so many situations where I could have been dead. But not only that, I feel like I died when I walked into this program, and that I'm only here a day at a time in recovery. You know, I feel very tight connection. It's very serious with me. My first meeting doing H&I, I took these very intense, severe meetings because I couldn't relate to anything else that wasn't severe. You know, I can't go to normal meetings. I go to meetings where there's, like, a lot of insanity, because there's just a lot of insanity going on in my head. And a lot of paranoia. It's, like, hard for me to relate to people and feel part of. I never used to realize how bad I felt about the things I did. And I'm guilty of those, but I'm not sure either. I did 2 4th steps and 5th steps, which over 8, I'm coming up on 3 years. And I made a lot of friends, but I never really let anybody get that close to me except for my sponsees. I never thought I was worthy of anything. I never really thought I had anything to give. But I just tried to take suggestions and actions that were suggested to me. I really tried to, I really believed what I heard in the room. And even though I don't want to, God, I don't want to. Sometimes I wish I was just a machine that could, like, create music, perform, get high, you know, like, I mean, it's like I want to just be this fucking blob with no feelings, you know. But I know that, you know, when I go through the growth, that I do get something out of it. You know? And I like to be honest. I like to be real. It's not that I don't mind other people being phony, whatever they, you know, whatever. I don't even think people are phony. I don't like to judge people, okay? But I mean, I like to be honest. So that means that I also believe that I can change by practicing positive thinking and stuff. But I don't believe in lying about who I am. And if it makes somebody reject me or hate me, I feel that it's good for both of us. You know, I do believe, trying to really believe that there is this higher power of the universe, and that everything happens for a very good reason. Everything's a healing. And well, the reason I guess I said I feel like I've died every day since I've come in is because I'm not really afraid of death. You know, I spent the first 2 years being afraid of dying of age. You know, because of all the sex and shit I was involved in. But then when I got over that, I realized that that wasn't the real fear. The real fear was that I was letting go to a higher power, and that I was only here but for the grace of God. And I'm not saying that in a religious way. I'm saying it in a, I feel that when I die, I'll just be moving on. Like I've been moving on and felt in the program. I feel I've lived a beautiful life. If I look at it honestly without judging it, I've had an amazing life. I've forgiven my parents, knowing that, and taking actions that were suggested, and hearing other people with my same exact story, very few. But, you know, knowing that the pathway to, the pathway to just a higher quality of living is through, you know, love and forgiveness and letting go and all this. And, you know, I'm insane. I still act out. I get all these fucking lines. And I'm crazy. I mean, I have a lot of fun. You know, I'm always writing shit down and trying to, like, be fun and whatever. But I really take recovery seriously. And the people that are in my life, I really value and